Imagine trying to move a few million dollars across, say, three different international borders.
Right.
And you're actively switching your allocations from U.S. equities to European debt.
Mm.
And then eventually you want to pass that entire portfolio down to your children.
Yeah, of course.
But doing all of that without triggering a single capital gains or income tax event along the way.
It sounds impossible.
It does. To most people, that sounds highly illegal. Like, it sounds like something involving hidden briefcases and some shell company in the Caribbean.
Yeah, the classic movie trope.
Exactly. But it's not. I mean, it is done every single day by highly informed investors using a really boring, centuries-old financial mechanism.
Which is, surprisingly, a life insurance policy.
Yeah.
It is the ultimate legal loophole hiding in plain sight. And the reason it sounds so secretive, or maybe shady to some, is simply because the financial industry wraps it in terminology that feels incredibly intimidating.
Right. They make it sound impenetrable. Which brings us to our mission for today's deep dive.
Yes, let's get into it.
So we are unpacking a very specific, highly comprehensive guide today. It's from the Osel Gamma Investment Platform, and it's titled Offshore Investment Bonds, a Global Guide for Saudi Investors.
Right.
And our goal here is to just strip away the jargon, right? We want to look at the actual mechanics of these tools.
Because it's relevant to a lot of people.
Totally. Whether you are an expat navigating cross-border wealth, or maybe a Saudi resident planning your estate, or, you know, just someone curious about the actual architecture of global wealth.
Yeah, we are breaking down how these structures operate under the hood.
Right. So let's start with the core mechanism. Because when I was looking through the Osel Gamma guide, the phrase offshore investment bond immediately struck me as just a massive historical misnomer.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, I mean, a typical bond is just a debt instrument, right?
Yeah.
You lend money to a government or a corporation and they pay you back with interest.
Yeah, that's standard finance 101.
But this isn't that at all.
No, not even close. It is entirely a misnomer, and it causes immense confusion for people. You are not lending money.
Right.
At a fundamental level, an offshore investment bond is, well, it's a tax-efficient legal wrapper.
Okay, a wrapper.
Yeah. It's a structure issued by a financial institution, specifically an insurance company located outside of your home country.
Wait, so it's insurance?
Yes. What's fascinating here is that these bonds are, at their absolute core, life insurance contracts.
That is wild.
But they just happen to have a massive, robust investment portfolio built into them as the primary engine.
And this is where the underlying mechanism is so fascinating to me. Because the reason wealthy investors use life insurance contracts isn't necessarily because they, like, care about the death benefit paying out to their family.
Right. The death benefit is almost secondary.
They use it because of how tax law views insurance.
Exactly.
Like, if I buy an ETF in a standard brokerage account,
right,
and then I sell it to buy something else, I trigger capital gains tax.
Standard taxable event.
Right. But if that exact same ETF is held inside a life insurance policy, the tax code typically treats the internal growth of that policy as deferred.
Yep.
The legal structure of the insurance contract basically acts like a firewall.
Exactly. You are exploiting a globally recognized legal precedent here.
Wow.
Because the tax authorities, they look at the wrapper, not the underlying assets.
Oh, I see.
So when you deposit capital into one of these bonds, your money is pooled with other investors. The insurance company then uses that pooled capital to purchase standard, highly regulated financial instruments.
Like what?
Like mutual funds, ETFs, or even cash reserves across different currencies.
But the key distinction here, and the guy points this out, is ownership. I don't actually own those mutual funds, do I?
No, you don't. The insurance company does.
Right. I just own units in the bond itself.
Precisely. That separation of ownership, that's the secret sauce.
Yeah.
Because you don't directly own the asset. You aren't directly liable for the immediate tax consequences of trading it. You hold the rights to the policy's value.
You know, I like to think of it as diplomatic immunity for your portfolio.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah, it's like a premium bento box.
Okay, a bento box. Walk me through that.
Well, you buy the entire box, right? And that box acts as the embassy. And inside that embassy, you can swap out the rice for noodles, or in financial terms, the equities for corporate debt.
Right, right.
And because all of those transactions are happening inside the legal jurisdiction of the insurance wrapper, your local tax laws can't reach in and tax every single trade.
Exactly.
You basically bypass the constant drag of taxation that usually, you know, severely limits the compounding growth of a portfolio over a 20 or 30 year horizon.
And to push that diplomatic immunity analogy further, you really have to look at where these embassies are actually located.
Right, the jurisdictions.
Yeah. You typically set up these structures in highly specific jurisdictions, places like the Isle of Man, Guernsey, or Luxembourg.
And the irony is, these aren't the shady, unregulated tropical islands from the movies, right?
Not at all.
These jurisdictions have basically engineered their entire legal codes to protect this exact kind of capital.
They really have. They offer incredibly strict policyholder protection legislation.
What does that mean in practice?
Well, if you hold a regular brokerage account and the brokerage goes bankrupt, you might be tangled in litigation for years trying to recover your assets.
Right, a total nightmare.
Yeah, but in a place like the Isle of Man, the law mandates that the underlying assets in your offshore bond are entirely ring-fenced.
Ring-fenced, okay. Yeah.
Yes, they are legally separated from the insurance company's own shareholder funds.
Wow, okay.
So if the insurer collapses, your money cannot be used to pay off their creditors. That institutional protection is a massive reason why global capital flows there.
That makes total sense. And getting the capital in there generally happens in two ways, right?
Yep.
You have a single premium bond, which is just a lump sum. Like, yeah. Case you sell a business in Riyadh.
Yeah.
Or you inherit a large sum and you deploy it all at once to get it immediately inside the wrapper.
Right. That's one way.
Or you use a regular premium bond. And that's where you are dollar cost averaging over time with, like, monthly or annual contributions, just building the portfolio gradually.
Correct. The funding mechanism is completely flexible depending on your liquidity.
Okay, so the structure clearly saves you from the constant drag of capital gains tax.
Yes, it does.
But that raises a massive contradiction for someone listening right now in Saudi Arabia.
How so?
Well, the kingdom currently does not impose personal income tax, nor does it have a capital gains tax on standard personal investments.
True.
So if I live in a place with zero tax drag already, building a complex tax shelter offshore seems like, I don't know, buying a heavy umbrella in a desert.
A heavy umbrella in a desert, yeah.
Right. Like, why go through the hassle and take on the complexity if the problem doesn't even exist?
That is the big question. But you have to remember, wealth isn't static. And more importantly, people aren't static. If your entire life, from birth to death, will be spent solely in a tax-free jurisdiction, and your beneficiaries will remain there as well, the tax deferral aspect alone might not justify the structural complexity.
That makes sense.
But look at the modern demographic in the Gulf. You have expatriates currently working in Saudi Arabia but planning to retire in the UK, Canada, or somewhere in the European Union.
Right. They're going to eventually cross a border into a high-tax regime.
Exactly. If they simply move their standard, unsheltered brokerage portfolio to the UK, it suddenly becomes exposed to heavy capital gains and income taxation.
Ouch.
Yeah. However, if they had the foresight to place those assets inside an offshore investment bond years prior, while they were still in the zero tax environment of Saudi Arabia, that previously untaxed growth is protected.
Oh, wow. So they arrive in the new country with the wrapper already established, offering a massive legal advantage.
Exactly.
So you buy the umbrella before you travel to the rainy country.
That's a great way to put it.
But it is not just expats, right? The guide mentions it applies to Saudi nationals too, especially regarding multi-currency flexibility and estate planning.
Yes, very much so.
Like, holding investments in dollars, euros, and pounds simultaneously hedges against exchange rate risks for families whose lives or businesses cross borders.
Right.
But the estate planning piece is where the local context gets highly specific, doesn't it?
The estate planning aspect is critical, particularly regarding how assets are distributed.
Because in Saudi Arabia, local asset distribution is governed by Sharia-forced heirship laws.
Yes.
And the law dictates exactly how wealth is divided among surviving relatives, leaving the individual, you know, very little room to nominate specific beneficiaries outside of those set percentages.
Exactly. But because an offshore bond is technically a life insurance contract situated outside of the domestic legal system, it operates under different rules.
Ah, yeah.
So that is the mechanical advantage of the wrapper in a local context. Because it is a life insurance policy, you designate specific beneficiaries on the contract itself.
Right.
When the policyholder passes away, the assets inside the bond do not necessarily go through the standard local probate or local forced heirship distribution.
They bypass it.
Yes. They pay out directly to the named beneficiaries on the policy.
Oh, wow. So for a Saudi investor who wants to allocate a specific portion of their global wealth to an individual who, you know, might not be prioritized under forced heirship, The offshore bond provides a legal mechanism to maintain absolute control over that distribution.
Precisely. You retain control.
And it does all of this smoothly, avoiding a really public, multi-year court process.
Yes, exactly.
But okay, we have to address a massive caveat here. Because the OSOL Gamma Guide spends significant time discussing what they call the transparency era.
Right. This is huge.
There is this outdated perception that offshore means hidden, that you just park your money in Luxembourg and nobody ever knows about it.
We really have to completely dispel that myth right now.
Let's do it.
The era of the secret shadow offshore account is entirely over.
Dead and gone.
The regulatory landscape has shifted massively over the last decade, driven primarily by the Common Reporting Standard, or CRS.
So let's explain the mechanics of CRS for a second, because it really is the death knell for tax evasion.
Yeah, it is.
It's a global information sharing agreement developed by the OECD, and over 100 countries are part of it now.
Mechanically, CRS works through automatic data sharing using tax identification numbers.
Okay, how automatic are we talking?
Very. If you are a Saudi resident and you open an offshore bond in the Isle of Man, the financial institution there is legally obligated to identify your tax residence.
Right.
At the end of every single year, that institution automatically packages up your account balances, the interest, the dividends, and the capital gains.
And sends it where?
They send that data directly to the local tax authorities in the Isle of Man.
Who then automatically forward it to the tax authorities in your home country.
Exactly. There is no manual request required. There is no subpoena necessary. The data flows across borders systematically.
Wow. So you cannot use these bonds to hide money.
Absolutely not. Compliance is mandatory. Setting up an offshore structure today requires consulting a cross-border tax advisor to ensure every single reporting requirement is met in both the issuing jurisdiction and your country of residence.
Which brings us to the toll required to cross this bridge.
The catch.
The catch, exactly. Products with high structural advantages in finance always come with strict rules, layered costs, and significant illiquidity.
Nothing is free.
Right. So let's read the fine print of the offshore bond.
Yeah.
Because if I am tying up capital, I need to know the actual risks.
Well, the first tangible risk is currency fluctuation.
Okay.
Multi-currency flexibility is a double-edged sword. Let's say you hold the majority of your offshore bond in euros to diversify away from the U.S. dollar.
Sure.
But your primary living expenses and business operations are in Saudi riyals, which are pegged to the dollar.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. A sudden depreciation of the euro against the dollar mathematically erodes your real world purchasing power, regardless of how well the underlying mutual funds actually performed.
Right. But the real catch always seemed to come back to liquidity and fees.
Mm-hmm.
These structures are notorious for locking your money up.
They are.
Like, you can't just treat this like a checking account and pull your capital out in year two without taking a massive haircut.
You will face steep exit penalties in the early years. And it helps to understand why the industry structures it this way.
I do they.
When you establish the bond, the life insurance company incurs significant upfront costs to underwrite the policy, set up the legal wrapper, and frequently pay an upfront commission to the financial advisor who facilitated the structure.
Ah, okay.
The insurance company needs time to recoup those initial capital outlays. They do this by enforcing lock-in periods.
The fees are heavily layered, too. You aren't just paying one expense ratio.
Not at all.
You are paying the initial setup fee for the bond.
Yep.
Then you pay an ongoing annual management fee to the insurance company just for maintaining the wrapper. And then, on top of that, you are paying the underlying fund, charges the actual fees, to the portfolio managers running the mutual funds, or EPFs, inside the bond.
It is a layered fee architecture, absolutely. And it heavily cuts into your compounding returns if you are not careful.
Which begs the question, why pay for this financial timeshare?
Financial timeshare. That's a bit harsh, but I get it.
Well, if I have to hold this for a minimum of 5 years just to break even on the setup costs and avoid exit penalties, it feels highly restrictive.
It is restricted by design.
For the everyday investor looking at this, the sheer weight of the fees seems to just negate the tax advantages.
And that caution is entirely justified. The OSOL Gamma Guide stresses that the investment horizon is non-negotiable.
So no short-term plays here.
If your time horizon is 3 years, do not use an offshore bond. Period.
Right.
You have to view the layered fees not as a penalty, but as the calculated price of the legal and tax architecture.
Okay, the price of admission.
Exactly. You are paying for the estate planning mechanism, the diplomatic immunity of the wrapper we talked about, and the institutional protection of the jurisdiction.
But it really places the burden of due diligence squarely on the investor.
Very much so.
You have to demand absolute transparency from your advisor. You need them to model exactly how much the initial charge, the ongoing admin fees, and the custodian fees will drag on a hypothetical, say, 7% annual return over 10 years.
Yes, you need to see the math.
Furthermore, the wrapper is only as strong as the institution issuing it. You have to vet the reputation of the life insurance company.
That is crucial.
Are they highly capitalized? Are they operating in a tier one regulatory environment?
Right. Due diligence is your only defense against an inefficient structure. And because of this complexity, the lock-ins, the layered fees, the mandatory CRS reporting the practical execution of the strategy looks very different from standard investing.
Right, because I can't just walk into a local retail bank in Riyadh, hand them some capital, and ask for an Isle of Zan offshore bond. It just doesn't work that way.
No, not at all. Local domestic banks do not typically hold the licensing or the cross-border networks to issue these specific global products.
So how do you actually do it?
To access an offshore bond, an investor in the Gulf generally must utilize an international financial advisor or a specialized wealth management platform like Uzul Gamma, for example, that acts as the intermediary.
Which raises the local alternative. Like, why not just skip the intermediary, skip the layered fees, and invest in a domestic sukuk?
A valid question.
A domestic sukuk is highly regulated by local authorities, it is straightforward, and it supports local infrastructure.
It is a classic trade-off between domestic regulatory comfort and global reach.
Okay, unpack that.
A domestic sukuk, which is an Islamic financial certificate similar to a bond, offers lower structural risk. You understand the local legal system, and you are shielded from international currency fluctuations.
Right.
But the cost of that comfort is geographical concentration. If the local economy experiences a downturn, your portfolio takes the hit.
Lack of diversification.
Exactly. The offshore bond trades that local simplicity for access to a massive pool of global investment strategies, allowing you to diversify your risk across North America, Europe, and Asia.
But what if you want both?
Both.
Yeah. What if an investor wants the global reach and tax efficiency of the offshore wrapper, but strictly requires their underlying investments to remain Sharia compliant?
Oh, I see.
Because a lot of people assume that stepping into international finance means sacrificing religious or ethical investing principles. Can the bento box be entirely halal?
Yes, it can. And this is where sophisticated structuring comes into play.
Really?
Yes. The offshore bond is legally neutral. It is just a container.
Okay.
The jurisdiction of Luxembourg does not dictate what assets you hold inside the wrapper. You can absolutely construct a portfolio composed entirely of global Sharia-compliant mutual funds, international sukuk, and Islamic ETFs, and hold them entirely inside the offshore bond.
Wow. So you maintain your financial values while still leveraging the legal protections and the estate planning mechanisms of the offshore structure.
Yeah.
Exactly. It just requires an advisor who deeply understands the strict screening criteria of Islamic finance alongside the complex architecture of cross-border tax law.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You do not have to compromise on global diversification to maintain Sharia compliance, provided the structure is built correctly from day one.
Precisely.
Well, we have covered incredible ground today.
We really have.
By unpacking this guide, we have moved past the intimidating jargon. We've seen that an offshore investment bond is, at its core, a powerful, globally recognized life insurance wrapper.
Yes, the wrapper is everything.
It acts as a financial passport, granting tax deferral by acting as a legal firewall, providing multi-currency flexibility, and offering a strategic bypass for estate planning and wealth transfer.
But as we discussed, it demands a rigorous approach.
Right.
It requires a long-term horizon of at least 5 years, a meticulous audit of layered fees, and expert guidance to navigate the transparency of international compliance.
Which leaves us with a final, really fascinating implication derived directly from the shift toward global transparency that we talked about earlier.
Yes, the CRS rules.
We discussed how the Common Reporting Standard automatically shares data across borders, effectively destroying the shadows where capital used to hide.
It fundamentally changes the geopolitical landscape of wealth.
It does. And given that tax transparency agreements like CRS are rapidly making the financial world smaller and erasing the concept of financial secrecy, will the very idea of an offshore jurisdiction eventually become obsolete?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. If every single nation is automatically sharing the exact same financial data in real time, the borders effectively disappear. You have to wonder if the global wealth structures of tomorrow will look completely different than the ones we rely on today.
Absolutely.
If the borders disappear digitally, does a financial passport even matter anymore? Just something for you to mull over as you plan your own long-term strategy.
It's a lot to think about.
It really is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, keep learning, and we will catch you next time.